Hey y'all, this is your host, Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast, season 2. I hope the stories inspire you to switch careers. I have done all kinds of interesting things in my life, and I'm a firm believer if you only live once. Sit back and enjoy.
We are Switch into Tech. Tech resources to accelerate your career in information technology. Monthly classes on tech topics. We offer free or discounted exam vouchers, scholarships, free Udemy courses, free events, free boot camps, and more. You can find us at www.switchintotech.org.
Hey, y'all. This is Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. And today we have Sean with you, and he's going to talk about entrepreneurship and his career switch into it. Go ahead and give us an introduction.
Yes, my name is Sean Atkinson. I'm a brand and marketing strategist, which is just another way of saying I can take you from coming up with the business idea that you have and then turning it into how to generate revenue with it. I have been in and around the industry for over 30 years. I got my start pretty much by being around marketing and advertising so I could get a proper understanding of it. And then I just found myself fascinated enough with it so that I decided that my career was going to be learning about it and then using what I learned to be an entrepreneur.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur pretty early on. It's a little silly because it's one of the things that introduced me to entrepreneurship was the game Monopoly. I just remember being a kid and I would see things and say, I want it. My mother would say, you only want it because you see it. And I would say, yes, but I still want it. And her thing is, but you don't have the money. So when she introduced me to Monopoly and she handed me money, even though it was play money, I felt like a boss. And I was like, oh, I will never go back to just being someone that has to ask someone for something. So, from that point on, like when she introduced me and I was like, okay, well, I can do whatever I want. She was like, yeah, if you have the money, then yes. If you want to go buy candy, you can buy candy. If you want to do this, you can go do this. And I was like, okay, so I just need to come up with the money. So the first thing I did, like I started a candy business and I would buy candy on my way into school and then just slowly unwrap it in the middle of class. And, you know, somebody, ooh, can I have an hour later? Sure, 3 for $25. So by the time I was getting into lunch, I had already made my money back. And it got to the point where I got so efficient with it that my teacher mentioned it to my mother in open school night and was like, listen, your kids in here running a business. What's going on? And my mother went to get mad at me and said, like, well, what are you doing? I was like, well, you told me if I make my money, I can spend it whatever way I want. And it's what I love about my mother. She's pragmatic. I did say that. And she had to go back to the teacher and listen, I'm sorry, I did this. We're going to put some structure around it and it won't interrupt the class and everything else. And from that point on, I've always known I want to be an entrepreneur. I like the freedom of being able to generate my own money and do it on my own terms.
That's hilarious because I've known many people that have that same story of starting a little candy business in school, which is hilarious. That wasn't my story. I'll tell you my story in a minute, but I don't like the fact that at such an early age, you know, they stifle that. And, you know, I don't like that at all. But my story into entrepreneurship, I always wanted to be one too. I never had this vision of going to work every day and working for someone, but I don't know how old I was. I think I was like maybe 13 or 14 or something. Cause by that time, yeah, I had learned how to program. I taught myself how to program when I was like 9 or 10 and over the summer. And my parents thought something was wrong with me because I'm sitting inside the house instead of outside playing with the rest of the kids. And I got like 30 cousins. So I was always outside. But I was like, I'm going to sit in here and teach myself. And I'll never forget the website. It's Lisa Explains It All. It still exists. And funny enough, I had reached out to her during COVID and she finally got back to me and was like, and I told her, you know, you're the reason why I know how to do this stuff. And she's the same age as me. But I started a web hosting company. Don't ask me why I wanted to do that, but I did. And I had people that was buying from me, funny enough, at like 13, 14. And I didn't have the money to keep it going because at that point it was super, super expensive. I don't remember where I got the money initially, but my father was a janitor, my mother was a clerk. So it wasn't that much money coming in the house. They wasn't going to be able to fund me. So I had to shut it down. And me, being a dumb kid, didn't realize that it was serious to just shut something down like that. And I started getting all this hate mail. And like for so many years, my name was published on the internet, saying that I just basically shut my business down. And it's hilarious because my mother was like, she's a minor, like you can't put her name out there like that, it was freaking hilarious. And I recall my mother trying to email the person and get my name scrubbed off or whatever. But that was like my first real business, and but I wasn't generating enough to keep it going. And of course my parents didn't have the money. I could have been GoDaddy,
Hey, listen, you know, it's really the first that makes it.
but I love reading stories about people that they've done like 30 businesses and then one finally hits. That's just unbelievable to me. But where did your career begin? We kind of talked about it before, but what was your first career and how did it lead you up to being an entrepreneur?
Well, there's career and then there's the introduction to the career. The introduction to the career started when my mother got a job at Atlantic Records, which back then was Atco Records. So I remember going into her job and, you know, it's the record industry back in, geez, this would have been like, I am going to tell on my age. This is like late, ended of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. So I remember seeing like people that were stars back then and going to visit her at a job, and they were just walking around like regular people. And it was fascinating me. And I was like 6, 7 years old. And I was like, well, I don't understand. Like downstairs, you couldn't talk to them, but up here, you can. Like they'll come up and say something to you. And it was like, well, you know, out there they've got their persona. They've got like we built a brand for them. There's a perception they have to be able to maintain. And that's when I got my introduction to marketing. My career started when I got a job in the mall doing market research. I was the annoying guy that would come up to someone in the mall and ask them, do you have time for a survey? And I went into it knowing that, like, I don't like bothering people in the street. Like, I've never really been that. Like, I'm not really the guy that, like, even if I saw someone out in the street, like I didn't flirt in it. Like I think there's a place. Like if you're out in the street, you're going somewhere. You left the house for a reason, I guess is what I'm thinking. So I knew it was going to be a job that was going to be like annoying, but I wanted my first car and I had just moved to California. And the difference between New York and California is New York, you can get around because you can get on the train. But in California, at that point, the trains and stuff wasn't working. So a car was necessary. So it was a job where if you couldn't close a certain number of like surveys, you got fired. And I accepted the challenge. I got in, and apparently the marketing research and stuff that I had picked up over the years helped me in being really good at the job. So I learned that it's not just about going and asking the questions, it's knowing when and how to be able to ask the questions. So if I just saw someone coming in, I could say, "Do you have time for a survey?" And they would go, "No, yeah, no, I'm really busy." But after a point, I started noticing I would see the same people in the mall. So I would say, instead of me asking them the first time, I'm going to catch them another time. And an example would be there was one girl who was, I'm a taller person. So I understood like I didn't get to shop in the mall. Like when I would hang out with my friends, I could get t-shirts, but like clothes that were going to fit me, I'm 6'8", 6'9". So I at that point, they didn't have big and tall. So I knew I couldn't shop there. And I saw her and I'm like, you're hanging out with your friends. You're going into stores. I know they don't carry your size. So I would see the disappointment on her face when she would come out. And then eventually, like, I let her do that like 2 or 3 times. And then when she came out, I said, you know, do you have time for a survey? And the thing is, She was already in a mood. She didn't really feel like it. And I was like, listen, let me break it down for you. These brands are they're asking questions because they want to figure out how to be able to be of more service. I know that when I go in these stores, they don't carry my size. If I'm the only person saying that, I'm never going to see the results that I want to be able to get. I've seen you go into that store at least three different times with bright eyes and come out sad. I'm imagining you're running into the same issue I'm running into. They're asking these questions because they need to understand how to be able to be better. So by not answering the questions, you're doing yourself more of a disservice. So I ask you again, do you have time for a survey? Once I figured that part out, it was easy to get them to go in and start giving things, giving the information, because it's giving them the perception of like that your opinion matters. Now, the business side of it is you can't take all of the opinions. Sometimes people that make suggestions and things that you want, but you can't go with all of them because it doesn't align with your business model. But it doesn't mean that you can't do something with that information. So I say this to say we're in a point of business where intellectual property means a lot. So now you're seeing more people owning their information. So now more people are on their own websites and things like that. It's important because that data matters. Like if you can get that information is going to help you drive your business. If you're putting it where other people own that information, then you don't, they're giving you access to what they want you to have, but they're using it too. So it's not just thinking about the business idea, it's thinking about the business that goes along with it and how you're going to feed into the business to make sure you always eat.
You said a lot. You had me over here laughing because I'm tall. I'm 5'11". So I fully understand. I don't ever go in the mall either. So I used to go to the mall just to find boys, of course, but I would never shop. Thank God for the internet, because I
Yes.
never forget there was a store called Alloy. I believe it still exists. I haven't been on there in a couple of years or so, but they sold tall. I think they started off at like 34 inch inseam, and I think they have 40 now.
Yes.
And so that's where I would get all my clothes. So I never had name brand or anything like that, you know. And it's funny, once I moved to Mexico, you know, all I wore was dresses, because, you know, first of all, it was hot, but I'm like, you know, I finally have something that fits and it looks okay. But that's funny. That's how you got her. But yeah, I mean, language and, you know, the way you pitch something to somebody matters, and you know that being a marketing person. But outside of that, you said owning your data, and I don't know. I mean, I'm a millennial. So I've grown up with and without computers, and since I'm in tech, you know, to an extent, I've seen it, you know, go from where it was to what it is now. And I think when I was a teenager until my 20s, you know, early 20s, you could own your data, but I don't think you own your data as much as now, because when I used to program back in the day, you know, people had these scripts that you would install on everything, and that's how you would get your data and whatever else. But now we have things called software as a service, and of course Microsoft, Google, whatever, and you just install that on there, and they have your data as well as you. So you know, to an extent, yeah, you have your data, but then you don't. And outside of that, I mean, someone can literally just wipe you off, because
This is
you
true.
don't host it anymore. Someone else runs that hosting and things like that. Not to throw Trump out there, but I mean, they literally knocked him off of one of the biggest platforms, you know, ever. And you know, he built his own, and I think he's trying to go public with it or something right now. But you know, stuff like that happens nowadays. So is that a good thing or a bad thing, you know? Because I think, you know, dang, I'm showing my age, but yeah, 20 years ago, you could control your data.
You know, it's the longer you're around, the more you realize these things are cycles, and it almost comes from a place of arrogance sometimes, where I'll talk to someone and, well, I have a level of certainty, and I've seen certain things before, and I've seen how some of these things played out. And even though it's a different situation, human nature is still kind of the same. And there's a point where things, where people get a certain level of freedom, and then they go, ooh, that was too much. And then they start saying, we need to put some regulations in. And there's an ebb and flow to it. So when it comes to things like being on different platforms, like one of the things that I think that was so powerful was during COVID, it changed the landscape of things. I think what we're looking at now is different, where when I'm saying intellectual property, I'm talking more about your content. And I think what we're also seeing is another low-key shift where people went from owning their content to now we're looking at AI, where now AI is advising people so much that a lot of the content that's coming out isn't their own. So if anyone ever got to the point where they said, you know what, we read that article and 75% of us of that is us, we want our 75% back. How many of them are going to have articles where it's actually them talking about what they know versus them just saying, you know what, I'm just going to put something out there so that I have something. So that's where I'm talking about kind of owning it. It's more, is it your information or is it just you taking information that's out there and then just kind of structuring it in a way that it fits into what you're doing? But in general, you're absolutely right. I think the way to be able to own it is you have to invest more in it. So when it's as like a small business owner, minority owned business owners, when you don't have the budget, yeah, go to Google Analytics and go look at the analytics over there because it's free, and then figure out what it is that you need to know. And then the more you start to figure out what you need to know, the more you know what to look for. And then as you know what to look for, yeah, if somebody's offering you something where you can get it and you don't have to pay for it, absolutely. But the more you want to be able to own it, the more it has to be your content and you have something that you actually own. So to tie it back to COVID, these were user-generated platforms. Like social media is user-generated platforms. And it used to drive me crazy where people are like, oh, well, we're not making enough money. If you stop putting something up there, they don't have anything. They need you. It's in the name, user-generated content. So when COVID came and people were just in the house and they needed an outlet, you saw TikTok take off, YouTube took off, all the content creators, it restructured everything because they had to start giving them something to be able to keep people on those platforms. They saw an opportunity as a business to say, people are home, we've got people's attention. People took off and started studying new languages, new careers. It opened their eyes to be able to do more because they actually had to sit still for a minute. And then it gave them time to think about all the other things they want to do. This was a golden opportunity for those type of platforms to be able to take advantage. But in order to maintain getting the best people, they had to change their rev share. So all of a sudden, the control or more of the power shifted back over to the content creators, as opposed to when they would just put things up and they didn't know how much money they were going to make and things like that. So it opened the door for more content creators and things like that to come in. And I think that part was great. I think on the slide, what we're looking at is they've made it easier for people to be able to do it. But in doing so, it gives them a certain level of control back, because if you have so many people doing it, then if one person falls off, you feel like you can replace it with another one. So I see the business side of it, and then I see the entrepreneurial side of it. So that's where I enjoy it, because I learned the business side so that I could use the entrepreneurial side. Like, I know when I see a hustle from the business side of, oh, that's corporate putting their hands back in it. AI is corporate putting their hands back in it. It's basically going, if we allowed you to just go with your content and put your stuff out, we don't have that same level of control. But if we can kind of make it easier for you, it's almost like these website themes. Like, they've got things where now it's even easier to create a website that creates more people. It adds more competition. It means that everyone that is a gatekeeper that you have to pay to get in. So like if you have to get your LLC and certain things that you have to do, like in New York, it's expensive. I realize I've talked to people in other places and they're like, oh, I only had to pay this. And I'm like, oh my goodness, they're going to get you, make like we we're going to get you now, but you'll charge more in New York because we've charged you on the way in. So in order to make your money back, you're going to have to charge a certain amount. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, where, you know, it is a business And if you're not comfortable with the business part of the business, then you have to really think about what role you're going to play in it. Like, I grew up in the music industry, but what I couldn't stand was the business side of the music business. So I had to leave that to get over to advertising, entertainment, and other industries because, like, I grew up on music. Like, I loved it so much that to see the business side of it and see great artists that never got to come out and things like that, it's criminal to me. So, like, knowing the business side of things, you have to know that so that you can learn how to be able to maintain who you are in it. Because otherwise they'll have you fold into who they are. So when I kind of say intellectual property, I'm talking more about you being who you are as opposed to try to fitting into who they are and the construct that they create for you. Entrepreneurship is meant to be freedom, and it's important for you to hold on to that in the ways that you can.
You said so much, and you talked about user generated content and kind of somewhat stealing content from other people. I created a business during COVID because the other business that I had literally closed up overnight because I couldn't go out. I literally was pounding the pavement because I can hear Spanish very well face to face, but over the phone, I suck at it. So I would get my clients face to face. And plus, me being a Black woman, they're like, oh, I'm a novelty. So, that helped in a way too. So I would go out and get my customers that way. But the other business that I started during COVID was, I don't know how you want to describe it, but it was like an aggregator of information. That's basically what it was.
Yes.
So I would take the information that I had and I created a business around it, and I charged a yearly fee because I wasn't doing monthly. I want all my money
No,
up
no, no. That is a whole other conversation. I appreciate where you went with it without even saying a word. Yes.
I charged yearly and charged all my money up front. And it's crazy because the way I marketed was myself. I was like, oh, I got this. I'm getting this. I'm getting that. And people are like, well, how are you getting all these things? And I'm like, I just researched it. And that's how I got it. And so I literally created a website and I got my first customer the first day that I launched. And I didn't really charge anything, not as much as I could have charged, but I wanted testimonials and I made them give me testimonials. Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because I mean, I literally just stole information from a whole bunch of different places and put it together to where it's easier for people to get. And that's a whole
Says.
business in itself. And that could be pretty much anything because people don't want to research.
Ease of access. Market research is, I will ask the questions so that you don't have to. It's basically what it is. Like, I would define branding as doing the research to find out who your audience is, what it is they want, need, what they prioritize, building a business model around it. And then marketing is taking everything that you learned about the audience and then going back and say, here's what we learned. Am I right? And the more they say that you're right, the more you know that you got the audience that you want. And then the next step is to start to try to, move them through that customer journey of the know, like, trust, or, all the different ways that they describe it. But it really comes down to people buy from people that they know. People buy from people that they feel some kind of connection with. It's 95% of purchase decisions are based on emotional decisions or emotional connections. So if they don't feel like they know you, if they don't feel like they trust you, they're not going to do it. And it's increasing the risk because they don't feel like they trust you. So I love the intellectual property. I think this is what I'm saying. There's room for everyone because there are some people that know that and go, I know you don't want to do that. So I'm going to take the thing that you don't want to do because it doesn't bother me. And I'm going to package that up in a way and provide you ease of use. That's a business. And it's a smart business because if you know how to be able to pull that stuff from different places, I'll have conversations with people and they'll be talking about something. And I'm like, oh yeah, check your inbox. And they're like, well, what'd you send me? And it's like a little gift. And when they open it, it's like, yeah, that was what you were talking about, right? Like I was talking to someone yesterday and she was saying, oh, well, you know, she's a copywriter and she's saying, well, what I want to do is I'm going to do my onboarding, and then I want to like I'm running into issues being able to get the questions answered. And I was like, well, you're part of a program where the woman, she set up things where like you can send a questionnaire, and by the time they are supposed to, like, she doesn't have the call unless you fill out the questionnaire, because I at least need to have the base information so that I know what to ask you when we're on the call. But if I'm starting from scratch when we get on the call, then that's not a good use of your time or my time. And it makes it even harder for us to get that call scheduled or for things to move forward. So when you're talking about information gathering, anytime that you can add ease of use, you allow more people to get to participate, because initially it's only going to be the people that want to do the research, which is that's the entry fee. And that's what we're looking at when we see these like more and more entrepreneurs. I'm going to say there's over 600,000 that start a business every year. We're seeing those numbers go up because there's more ease of use. Before, people would go, oh my God, I have to figure out a website. Now you can pretty much go on there and they've got a website where all you have to do is just swap out some pictures. So the entry fee is different, so it allows more people to get in. But the trick to that is it allows more people to get in, but it also allows them to be able to move some of the people that they want out. So it's you have to go in, and this is why I stress the business model of if you go in and you're being yourself, then you stand a better chance of making it. But if you're going in and you're repeating what somebody else did, it's diluted more. And when they start saying it's a different in marketing, like I have a course in a presentation where I talk about where to place yourself in like the business journey. If you're a new business, then you're focusing more on walking alongside a person. If you've been around for a little while, then you're talking more about what you're doing in the present. If you're an existing business that's been around for a while, you can talk about how long you've been doing it and what made you great for so long that you've been able to have customers continue to come back and things like that. The marketing pitch is going to be completely different depending on where you're at business journey wise. So it's understanding those things. But yeah, I love the information gathering. I just think it's like with anything, and this is where it goes back to being around for a long time. There are people that like I know that this is a whole business, but there are people that would buy domains and they were just like, oh, this looks like something somebody would want. Bought it for $5 and then they sold it for $5,000. And when you've got that business idea and you're all excited about it, and then you say, oh, I got to get a domain, and you realize the one that you want is just parked somewhere. And that person was just like, yeah, I anticipated your need. And now I'm going to hit you with a markup. That's just business. And I can't be mad at them for anticipating something. I just have to know either I'm going to have to work around it, or I'm going to have to go through that to be able to get to what I want. So, entrepreneurship, it'll take everything you got, but it'll give you everything you want.
It's funny about the domain name because I have my name as my domain name. And I must have waited like maybe 5 years for that domain name to come available. And I checked one day and it was expired. And I'm like, oh God, like she didn't renew the domain name. And I've had it for probably about 15 years now. But yeah, like it's really crazy. I have the .com, the .net, and the .org.
Have to. I had someone break that down to me. She was like, if you don't own your name, what are you doing? Like, at the very least, own your name, because it's a story as old as time. Like, there's all these inventors that had these great ideas, but because they didn't do the paperwork, somebody was able to come in and just snatch it out from under them. So understanding the business side of the business is necessary for you to be able to still be yourself and be everything that you want to be able to be. But if you don't look at the business side of the business, it's a blind spot. And people that know how to navigate it will cut you off from the knees. And that's how people end up getting jaded and going, well, I had to go through it, so everybody should go through it. But if somebody can put you on to some of it going in so that you don't have to go through that, then it kind of opens the door to keep that going. And it makes it easier. So that kind of goes back to the everybody eats thing. If I helped you avoid those struggles, then my requirement for that is that you help the next person do it. Like somebody has to start with the sacrifice, and that's why I don't charge the things that I could charge, but like I still know it's a business. So like I'll have people that'll call me and I say, "Oh, can you do a website for $50?" No. Can you do one for 200? No. Like all the time, like I had one person call. What'll happen sometimes is people will get the idea, they'll get inspired, and then they start running around calling people to see like how to be able to make it work. And eventually, sometimes I'll be one of the people that they'll call, and I'll say, "Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to give you some information because I don't want you to repeat what you just told me to anybody else. Because if you call the right person and you tell them that, they're going to take you for every last cent that you have. So here's the things that you need to know. Here's some of the questions that you should be asking. You're not a good fit for my business, but here's the things that you should be asking so that when you do get on the phone with somebody, you know what to ask so you can tell if this is somebody that's trying to take you for your money or if this is someone genuinely trying to help you." Like those little things make a big difference because people remember that later. And it's those little acts of kindness that turn the business side of business into it being a little more human again. For some people, there are some people that are just wired different. Their thing is, I got in it for the money, and I'm going to make sure I get the money. So it really just
Shout
depends
out
on the
to Elise
person.
Robinson. I have the domain name. I believe she was an interior designer.
Hey,
I remember her
I love it.
website.
I love it. You slipped up. That's when the business side of business comes in. Like I'm over here making it seem like I'm all magnanimous, but like there was a time I had a business where I would buy laptops that were at one level, and then I would buy them, upgrade them, and then resell them. And oh my God, yeah, I'm very competitive. Like I'm over here making it sound like I am a nice guy, but I'm also about my business. So like, let me not pretend like I'm all, it's all flowers and candy. It is, I'm a good guy. I'm not a nice guy. Let me be clear. Like nice guys will have somebody run over you. You can't be an entrepreneur for a certain amount of time and not switch from the nice to the good. 'Cause if you're too nice, people will see it and they'll end up trying to take advantage of you. So you can be a good person, but you can't be a pushover. So like when I mentioned the computers, yeah. Oh, I used to love beating people. I'd wait till the last minute and just put my bid in and snatch it right from under their hands and have this vision in my head that I'm sitting over there crying and I would chuckle to myself. So yeah, it is a cutthroat part to it. It is a cutthroat part to it. In order for there to be a winner, there has to be a loser.
Oh
You
yeah,
just have to know how to do something with that loss.
definitely. I don't want to be cutthroat. I don't. But people will play you. They will play you all to the end. And me and my sibling, we have a talk about it all the time. Like, why I gotta be like that? Like, I just was trying to do this, and they went that way. So I had to go up here. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I mean by there are no feelings in business. That's my statement with business. There's no feelings, because when you have feelings, what do they what happens when you got feelings? They get hurt.
Mean, people are going to play on your feelings. Like, if you leave an opening, somebody that's looking for one is going to see that and go, "Ooh, that could be it." Now, whether they're capable of using that as a blind spot or not kind of depends on the person. But yeah. I mean, I've had people that were up under me that I thought were really, really good people. And I mean, they are, but they're about their business. And I go about my business in a different way. Like, I'm not going to take somebody's money if I don't think I can deliver. There are people that I know that'll take people's money because they had bills to pay. And it was on that person to follow through and make sure that they were supposed to get out of everything that they could out of that investment. So I think they're just people that go about doing their business a little bit differently. I'm not mad at them because, we all got bills. Like, why, if just because I'm okay with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, somebody might go, "You know what? I'm not. How am I gonna be mad at you? That was my choice. That wasn't, I'm not gonna force my choice on somebody else." And again, like I tell people, like, listen, if you're going in an entrepreneur, check with the people around you. Make sure that they're okay with the struggle that you're about to put all of them through, because it's not just going to be you. And these things make a difference when you're having a conversation with somebody that's going into business, whereas some of these other ones are going to take your money and go, "Here's the best practices. Here's the things that you need to know." But they're not telling you about that part. Like, sure, man, you're about to lose your girl. Your girl look like she's somebody that likes certain things. She likes going out to eat. She likes certain things. If you get ready to cut your check off so that you can go start being an entrepreneur, yes, she's supportive right now. Are you sure that you have a business plan that you're going to be able to do that within an allotted amount of time before she loses patience in you? Because you got somebody that, because you like them, that doesn't mean that nobody else likes them. And anybody can be you long enough to be able to get them away from you. So you need to think about these things. So when I'm having these conversations, I'm having real business conversations of this is what it could cost you, but this is what you can gain. Are you in it? Because if you're in it, this is the entrepreneurial mindset. If you're not in it 100%, here's some of the other ways that you can do it. Like, don't jump with both feet. Keep your job and then get your side job and ease your way into it to make sure that you can match your check before you do that. Because that is being courteous of the people around you so that they don't have to suffer. Then that way, the only person that really suffers is you. You got to give up more of your time. When you get off from work, then you start your real job, which is you trying to start the job that will take care of everything else. Like going back to the people around you and saying, you know what, I could do it this way, but I realize that's not going to be fair to you. So I'm going to do it this way. That's where you get the actual support. Like, oh, so you thought I was going to sit on the hook and not do this and not do that. Oh, no. But you figure out a way to not inconvenience me and still do what you're doing. I can support that. So, you know, it's just you have to be realistic about like entrepreneurship. You have to know what you're getting into. And a lot of times people know that they have a good business idea, but they don't have a business model or a business plan. And because they don't take this time to do that, like some people get a business idea and go create the website and then think they're going to figure it out later. Once you're out there, you're out there. And like you said, where you shut down the business, now your reputation's out there. So then if you want to start a business again, then you have to kind of undo the perception in order to be able to get that back out there. Now, thankfully, your mom said it right. Like, she's a child. Like, she didn't know. You can't hold that against her. But like, as an adult, I am of the mentality of if you took my money, then you knew what you were doing. So if I'm asking the right questions and you take my money anyway and you do me dirty, again, I'm a good guy. I'm not a nice guy. It's about business at that point. Like you don't know what I had to do to get that money, and you took that money. Like I go into the business of realizing I don't know what you had to do to make that money. Like for some people, earning a dollar is harder than other people. So for me, I put that the value of the dollar on the person that worked hard for it. Now, for the ones that it comes easier for, yeah, you can charge them more. But for the ones that, like, if you choose an audience that's a small business or a minority-owned business and things like that, their budget is different because they can't just be playing in their savings like that. So it's like you got to know that when you're getting into it. I take it a certain level of offense when I see people lock in on that audience and they don't take into consideration, like, you don't know what they had to do to earn that money. Like, that's not cool. So, like, when I got into it, I got into it with that understanding. And that's why you'll hear me say, I'm in it for the business. And, you know, like, I love seeing the results, but I also have to let them know going into it, like, I'm still about my business. I literally had a woman tell me once, she was like, oh, you don't love your people. What? Like, oh, I had this whole great idea, but like, you want to charge me this, this, and this. And I'm like, darling, like, it's a business. Like, and you're not the first, like, I had to sign an NDA and all the rest of that, so I can't get into, but it wasn't the first time I've heard that idea. I'm doing my own version of it, of we're going to help our people, we're going to lift everybody up, we're going to do that. Costs money. And if that's what you're going in there to do, then you need to understand it's going to cost money and it's going to cost you everything you got. But at the other end of it, if it's done well, you'll get opened up to a whole new world. You'll be in rooms that you were never in before, and the reward is worth it. But you got to be willing to do the work.
You know, you said so much, and so many things are running through my head. And I guess this is one reason why I'll probably never be a coach. I distinctly remember, I don't know, maybe it's different when you're writing than talking, but I was part of this move abroad group, and it was supposed to be nothing but Black people in it, right? And there was a lady, she had like a 3-year-old, and then she had like a fresh one, like fresh out the womb. And so, you see why I don't want to be a coach.
I'm sorry. That I feel like we've known each other. That's something people around that I spend time with would say that just cracked me up. I'm sorry. We can get back to the interview.
Yeah,
I just had a real
like
honest
sure,
reaction. I'm
she
sorry.
fresh out. And so, and she didn't say nothing about, having a man, not as if you need one, but another person moving abroad could be nice, right? When you have two kids. So she was like, yeah, I got my refund check and stuff, and I think I want to move abroad and stuff. And I was like, no, ma'am. I mean, there is no welfare in these other countries, especially if you're not a permanent resident or a citizen, assuming that they have welfare. So if you decide that you can't pay your rent or your light bill, or you need a little snacky snack, I mean, there's nothing there, ma'am. And I said, I think you need to reevaluate your plan before you just jump in there, because you getting your little refund check and you not having a plan after that, I don't know if you think you're gonna go 3 months and come back and then be in the same predicament or what. In a lot of these countries, there's no jobs. So,
There's no, there's technically no jobs here. So you want to go someplace where it's built around capitalism and go someplace else? So
And she got so upset, like she cussed me all the way out. And so, people jumped in my inbox because they're cowards. I don't do the cowardly thing either. And were telling me that I was right and like she shouldn't have went off on me. Things like that. And I guess my thing is, how do you handle that? I mean, you kind of talked about it with the lady, but do you just basically brush them off, or how do you handle those type of situations where you right, but they ain't trying to hear it?
I mean, you know what? I'll give you two examples. I'll give you one of me being hard-headed and being told some things that I was supposed to be listening to, and how not listening to it in that moment ended up costing me more time than it was supposed to. Because when I started my business, because of all of the marketing experience and stuff that I had, I was like, oh, I'm going to be like an agency of record, which is basically, I will take care of all your marketing, advertising, branding. I will make sure that you have everything you need, because that's what I did on a larger level. When you do that for a smaller business, they don't know what it is that you're doing. All they know is that you're charging them a certain amount of money. So when I started my business, I started with at least a few clients, and it was like, okay, with them, I know I'll be able to cover these bills and these expenses. So I need to stay in the black. Like, I need to make sure that I'm good on that. But when the pandemic hit, then it was like, oh, well, I got to start rethinking what I'm doing and da 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 da. And it's like, I'm the wrong one to cut corners with, because I'm doing a whole lot. And if I charge you what I was supposed to be charging you, you couldn't afford me. But now you're coming back to me and you're saying like, oh, well, I got to start cutting corners. And it's not like you're doing that much. And my thing is, you know what? You put your hands up. I have a saying that I joke with my friend about, because again, like, for years we've been in the consulting world, so we know like there's gonna be good days and bad days. My thing is, the most reliable thing in the world, the floor. The floor is always waiting for you. It's always ready for you. You need rock bottom. Sometimes rock bottom is the only thing that gets people up. If you need me to get out of the way for you to be able to see that, like, I actually knew what I was talking about, and you want to rush to get out to everybody else that's telling you something else, that's why I bake it into my business that by the time we finish every single stage, you have the right to be able to go. Like, I will give you what you need to go out there, but like, if you're just the grass is always greener, you're always going to be getting a different impression from somebody else instead of finding out your own. So like, if you're constantly chasing a voice and you're not listening to your own, you're always going to be mimicking what somebody else does. So when I say that I customize my services, I customize my services to them. Like, I got my best practices and insights and things like that, but I do an assessment similar to like you doing audits. I do an assessment. Like, tell me what your idea is. What got you into it? Like, there are basically four reasons people normally start a business. They had a good experience that they want other people to have. They've had a bad experience that they want people to avoid. They don't have firsthand experience in it, but they do have the solution. And then there are some people that like to be business owners in name only. And then the extra one is the ones where they're like serial entrepreneurs, where they have the ideas and they can't do anything with them, but they just need to get them out there so they get them out of their head and they can actually see it turn into something. I've been all of those. So I have an appreciation for like the people that are at different stages. So when somebody does something like that and they're like, oh, well, you know, it's like the woman that said, oh, well, you don't love your people. Darling, by being honest with you, that's how I'm helping you. Because what I'm trying to explain to you is I'm taking the time to explain this to you. These other people that you want to go out to, they're going to look to see how far down the path you are. And if you're still at the early stages, they're not going to donate their time or their resources, because once they take that on, they're responsible for your wins and your failure. And that's why I kind of go back to, I'm not going to take somebody's money if I don't feel like I can deliver, because you're putting your hopes on me. I don't know what you had to do to earn that money. So if I'm being honest with you and I'm saying that you're not a good fit, it's because I'm not going to take your money and put you in a worse position than when I found you. I am more of the belief that leave them better than you found them. So with that's how I deal with that specifically. Leave them better than you found them. Like if you start off and they went a certain place, if I'm educating you throughout the process, you at least know what you don't like. So now you can go out and find what you do like. I may not be a good fit. I joke with people. I think I came to this when I was like a teenager. I'm an acquired taste, not a required taste. Like I'm not meant for everybody. If I was meant to please everybody, then I would be nobody. Like there would be no me in it. It would be me being what everybody else wanted. Like it's you got to you have to kind of block some of that out, because they mean well, but they don't know well. Like, you know, when a guy told me you have to niche down, like he's like, oh my God. Like I was on a live call as a bunch of people. It was like, I can't stand those one-stop shops. And I'm sitting there hanging my hat on it. I was feeling good, like, but I can do all of those things. But he was like, but when you're saying that you could do everything, then it means you're not good at one thing. So start with the one thing that you know that you're good at that you can do on an off day, and show that you're good enough at that so that you know that you have that. And then you build on that as you go. So it's if someone comes in and they're trying to do something where, like in this situation, she wanted to be able to leave and go someplace else, it's like, listen, I could help you do that, but then I personally, because of who I am as a person, would feel responsible for you. And I gotta be honest, I don't want that responsibility. Now, I'm sure somebody else will take your money and send you out there. And when things go wrong, you know who you remember in that? The one person that was being honest with you and saying, I don't want to put you in that position because it's not gonna end well. And what happens is if they get enough time and they actually are in a position, those are the people that come back. And when they come back, they're not coming at you the same way. They're coming back from a level of humility of, oh my God, they ragdolled me out there. You know what I mean? Like I was a chew toy. They just tore me up. And now I'm coming back going, oh, you were right. So when the guy told me to niche down, like I ended up going to one of his conventions out in Cabo, and I think he saw it because it's an exclusive thing. Not a lot of people get in, and I didn't think I was ready. But I think what made him say I was ready was I stepped away from thinking that I knew it all, because even though I knew what I was talking about, I didn't understand the business side of it. He was saying niche down because his thing is, in order for you to generate the money that you need to, so that you can do all of those things, you have to start making money. So this is part of the conversation I have with people now, where it's like, listen, I know you want to, you know, you're talking about, oh, I want to make six figures. I'm going to help you get to your first 50 customers. And then once you get your first 50 and you're starting to get those testimonials, the reviews, depending on the business, you might need customer success stories. Don't make your business about you trying to tell people why they should invest in you when you can have the customers do that work for you by delivering good results. If you focus on delivering the good results, then people are perfectly happy to be able to say, I spent my money and it worked well for me. People love to brag on themselves. You don't have to worry about that. Look online. People brag on themselves all day on social media. Trying to avoid putting you in a position where you're going to make yourself look bad. If you don't want to, that's okay. I'm not going to take offense to it. But I am also petty enough where I will let somebody know I am an I told you so kind of person. So This is what may make me a good business person. I mean, a good fit for your business or a bad person for your business. If you're not the type of person that wants to hear that, then I might not be the person for you. Because yeah, if we're doing something and I'm like, you should go with this strategy and you don't, it's okay. I'll help you get out of it when you're in that situation. But I will remind you that like I tried to tell you this was gonna happen. So in some cases, you have to kind of prognosticate. You have to say, here's some horror stories. Here's some, people that were in this position that made the choice that you're about to make, did this, and this is how it ended. Now, if you warn someone and you give them that story and they do it anyway, then you've kind of unburdened yourself of feeling responsible for them because you warned them, you didn't take their money, you didn't do them dirty, and it still allowed you to hold on to your integrity and then allow them to go out there and realize it's a business. If you find somebody that cares enough to be able to answer your questions and tell you all of that, that's probably the person that you should work with because they're going to walk alongside you on your journey as opposed to giving you just enough and then sending you out on your way.
I wanted to ask this question, and then I guess we can kind of wrap it up. But do you think image, the way someone looks, plays a huge role in business? There's a difference between having long hair, short hair, skinny and fat, tall and short. A beard, no beard, How much do you think that plays a role in, making money? Because, you're in marketing, you're in branding.
Great question. The honest answer is it 100% matters. I'm not gonna lie to somebody, but as someone that works in positioning, which is basically just another way of saying, I'm telling you where to stand, what to wear, and how to stand, how to be in a position when someone's making a decision to put yourself in a position where you're an option. Like, I can't promise that you're going to be the only option, but I can put you in a position to be the option. If you're someone that, like, one of the things that I look at are like introverts. Like, they don't want, they know that they want to have the business, but it's not in their personality to be out there and be the salesperson. Like, I can be both, but like, in the reality, I'm a homebody. I don't want to be bothering people. We started with, I don't want to be talking to people out in the street and interrupting them during their day, but I had to get my car. So I'm going to do what I got to do. It's something where you have to look at, this is where the business assessment comes in. And I'll try to narrow this down so it's not long-winded. You have to play to your strengths and you have to tell your story in a way where there's an audience for everyone. Everyone's got their story. Like if you look at some of these, some of the marketing now, they're marketing for plus size women. They're marketing for taller people. Where there's things that are out there specifically talking to that audience. If you do the research and you find out who your audience is, then you get to be your authentic self to that audience. But if you don't, and you're just trying to talk to everyone, then you're going to be judged based on a narrative that they create for you versus the narrative that you can create for yourself. So in a way, you have to be a storyteller. If you know that you're someone that has image issues, like if it's someone where they're overweight, leverage that. Be human about it to the point where there's other people that are gonna have that same insecurity, and they're like, you know what, I could go over there with that little, the one that's all in shape and all the rest of that, but I'll be secretly over there hating them. Why shouldn't I just work with somebody that feels the same way I feel so we can take that journey together? Like that's more of an enjoyable experience as opposed to going with someone that feels like they've already figured everything out. The more you figured it out and the more you're further away from it, you may not understand the struggle the same way. It's like when, you think about it, if we can use music, we can use anything, sports. Like there are people that, you may start off a certain level of hungry, but like when the next generation comes around, they're like, you don't know what it was like to struggle like that. I made sure you didn't have to. So it's how do you explain something to the person that didn't have that experience the same way? Versus someone that's in it at the same time. So when you're like, oh, you don't understand what the stress is like, if they're that far removed from it, no, they don't. But if they're in the mix with you and they're taking that a path with you, then it's something where you feel more comfortable being free and you can actually benefit from the things that other people would think would hold you back. So being your authentic self and you actually get rewarded for that these days, as opposed to you had to put the persona on the way that you used to. Like when I'm talking about back in the music industry days, now you see more people being more themselves as opposed to the brand that they created for them. I'll give you one last example. Look at Papa John's. That guy was the face of their franchise. And then he said something that people didn't like, which I don't exactly remember what it was, but I remember seeing that and going, oh yeah, that's not going to be good. And then they were just, they were in the spot because they were like, we built everything around that person. If I'm honest, one of the other reasons I didn't want to be stay in the music industry is because you're branding a person. People talk, people do things. So like when people say, would you rather a brand or would you rather focus on the business? I'm saying you can do both, but if you hang your hat on a brand, then you have to stick to that. So like think about a singer that does an album. And after a certain amount of time, the longer they're around, when you go to the concerts, they're sticking the mic out to the audience to sing. They're tired of singing that song. They've been singing that song forever. Like, they may have loved it when they did it, but the feelings that they had when they created it are not the same now because they're not the same person. So, like, you have to take those things into consideration. But when you're your authentic self, we see what the pushback is. There are some artists that put stuff out, and then all of a sudden they want to do something different. And the audience is like, whoa, 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 whoa. We like that person. Who told you you could be this person? That's where the market research and stuff comes in. Like, you can't make drastic changes without expecting to lose some of the people that you had in your life then. It's the same with going into entrepreneurship. If they're used to you being an employee, and all of a sudden you switch over to being an entrepreneur, it's going to be a different people that you have around you. Some people are going to switch over. Some people are going to go, I preferred you this way. And you have to outgrow those things to be able to do that. So when it comes to brand, it absolutely matters. But if you control the narrative, then you control the perception. So get out in front of it from the beginning so that you don't allow other people to tell your story. You tell your story. And when you tell your story, nobody can tell you how you can tell your story. It's your experiences. So that goes back to if you had a great experience, then you're sharing it with people to make sure they enjoy it. If you had a bad experience you're helping people avoid, then that's your story. If you never had that firsthand experience, but you just have the solution, be honest about it. If you're just in it for the money and like, well, I'm gonna start this and then I'm gonna go ahead and hand this off. Think about some of the black hair care products, how people got so caught up in them and then ended up selling out to the bigger brand, and the bigger brand ended up just kind of turning it into something where it ended up fading away. Because they were competition and they were taking money off the table. And people invested in that business because they felt like they cared about them. If you know you're going into the business to sell it, be honest about that. Don't make your marketing around getting people to care that way. Just focus on the results that you give. So when you tell your story, think about the story that you're telling, and that allows you to narrative and it allows you to tell your story in a way that nobody can really mess with that. There's competitors, they can say, oh, well, this person does this, they can do that. 95% of all purchase decisions are based on emotional connections. It doesn't matter what you look like. That's an initial thing. Most people like people when they first meet them, and then as they get to know them, sometimes you realize you don't like the person the same way. But if you're your authentic person, authentic self from the start, and not that representative, think about some of the people that'll buy, and then once you get that sale, all of a sudden they stop caring about you the same way. It's the same thing. Be your authentic self throughout, and that's how you get brand loyalty and you get people that stay around. But if you're just doing it just to be able to get the sale, people notice, and then they eventually navigate towards the people that they feel like they have a real connection with. So you can get a sale once, but if you're trying to get a sale 100 times from the same person, you're better off being your authentic self. It doesn't matter what you look like, any of the rest of that. The perception goes from being aesthetics to how you make them feel before and after the purchase. So if you have a business where you plan to have repeat business, you're better off being yourself than being what you think they want you to be.
Yeah, that I can agree with. I asked that only because, that's a big thing in marketing is how you look and how you talk and whatever else. And there was, I guess, a case. It was all over Twitter, I guess Black Twitter. And, I'm looking at the dude and I'm like, what would make you trust this guy with your money? Like, he looked like he was 5'2". His clothes didn't fit him, and his hairline was jacked up. And I'm just like, y'all gave this man all this money? crazy. But I'm like, his mouthpiece must have been nice, because I mean, looking at him, ain't no way I would have gave him hella money. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I want his mouthpiece.
He told his story. He told his story. It's sometimes it's not the contents, it's the wrapping. Because people will buy the wrapping, and that's why there's so much buyer's remorse. Like there's 95% of people that base things on emotional connections. 74% end up having buyer's remorse. Like 74%? That's three quarters of the people that made that kind of decision went, you know what? If I had thought about it, I wouldn't have done that. That's why they say hindsight is 20/20. So like once you get past that, that's what I'm saying. There's a difference between selling something once and then selling something multiple times. You can fool somebody once. You can't continue to fool a person again. So if you're the type of business that like you know that you're going into it with the intentions of getting over, you can sell it once, but you're not going to be in business for a long period of time. That's why I'm like, there are some people that'll get in business, make their money, and then they're out. You can do that with that. But if you plan on being around for a while, your reputation is what gets you the money. There are a lot of small business owners that they don't advertise. They get their business because they get results. And then that person went and told somebody else and went and told somebody else. And then that's how that works. So I laugh when I talk to people, and the first thing they start talking about is I got to do paid advertising. To who? You don't even know who your audience is yet. You're guessing who they are, but are you going to pay to have a conversation with somebody if you don't really know they want to talk to you? That's so yeah, I think being your authentic self matters. I think that is a case study for somebody that told their story in a way that gained enough interest. Like I don't know who he was or what his story was, but I'm guessing his positioning was set up well enough where he was able to get them in through the door. But I don't know what happens after they get through the door. What I find most fascinating is what happens after people get through the door. Like in my career, there's salespeople and then there's account managers. I'm more of an account manager. I'm the person that you talk to after you've been sold a bill of goods, and I have to figure out how to make it work. So that I structured my business that way. I structure everything that I do that way. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not going to sell you something because I could tell you a way to make it sound good, but I'd prefer to just be honest with you and say, listen, this is what the situation is. You want to start a business, it's going to require these things. Based on what you're telling me you have around you, there's going to be some people that are going to fall off to the wayside, but you'll replace them with people that actually like want to see you succeed. There are subtle haters. Like I remember hearing that once, and I was like, what is a subtle hater? There are people that sit around you and be competing against you, and you not even know it. Like entrepreneurship and certain things like that, when you start making strides in your life, it shines a light on on those people because you get to see their reaction when you win and when you fail. And in entrepreneurship, you're going to have wins and failures all the time. So you get constant reminders of who's in it for you and who's not.
No, definitely. Last little bit, and then we can get up off of here, because I mean, I didn't specifically ask you the questions, but we pretty much went through all the questions. But you said subtle haters. And I think it's more so, this is why I'm not scared to do anything or to ask certain type of questions or do whatever. I used to do I'm gonna give up one of my hustles, but I used to do mystery shopping when I lived in LA.
Nice.
And yeah, it's a real thing, y'all. It's a real thing. And so the city that I lived in, like I can literally walk down the block and get like 10 done in a day. So I would make good money doing it because they were just all in one
The
place.
convenience of it,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I called it my acting, because they would give you a scenario and then you would go and do it, right? So I could be somebody that made $250,000 and I'm looking to buy a house or something like that, right? At a bank. Or I can go to a BMW dealer and pretend like I'm buying a BMW. And I couldn't afford a BMW at like 22. So, so yeah, and so that one thing is that gave me my courage, you know, because I'm like, damn, I can go here and play all these damn different characters and people and talk to these people, because I'm an introvert too. So that kind of helped me come out of my whatever you want to
Yes,
call it.
absolutely.
And then number two is I never saw the same people when I went into these places. Because a lot of these ones I would do every week. I would go back every week and do the same mystery shop. And then number three, when you talk about the haters, it's like most people don't have the get up and go and the oomph to even try to do what you're going to do. So that also gave me the fearlessness to go in and do whatever I wanted to do, ask the questions and whatever, because I ain't gonna never see this person ever again in life. For whatever reason, they don't never have the same people. Number two, people ain't gonna be able to do it. You know, I talk to people and they're like, damn, I can't believe you did that. You know, I'm like, well, why wouldn't you do that? You know, shoot, I got to eat.
This is why I say you have an entrepreneurial spirit. You understand that part. Once you understand that part, it's like, listen, identify the things you're willing to do to make your money, and then identify how much money you want to be able to make. Once you find out how much you want to make, then it'll help you figure out what you're still willing to do for that money. First, say what you're willing to do, then put a dollar amount to it, and then say, okay, what would I, now how much of this am I willing to do to be able to get that, to be able to hit this goal? As long as you're able to do that, then there's some things that allow you to sleep at night, and there's some things that don't. Some people sleep very well, some people don't. Like, you got to know yourself. You have to customize these things to who you are. Like, the subtle haters, I'm also lumping into that the people that they may want to do things, they aspire to things, but they don't have the follow through to be able to do it. And then seeing you do it, just it rubs them the wrong way in a way that they may not even be aware of. And it's a subtle thing that you'll pick up on. Like, when you have great moments, you'll see that they're just kind of, it's they don't even have to not be happy for you. They're just happy for you in a different way. Then when something goes wrong, they're the first one there to console you. Like, I'm looking at those things, and I repeat these back to other people so that they have a better idea of what you're looking at. Because in some cases, but you covered it right there. Like, when you're doing like the mystery shopping, like, you can do that once, but if you go back to that same person and you try to be a different person and they remember who you are, then it's gonna be like, get out of my store. So that's the difference between selling something once and selling something multiple times. So if I'm doing a business assessment, that's one of the questions I'm asking. Like, how long do you want to be in business? Like, is this something that you're doing? Like, you're going to pass on to your family? Is this something that you're doing just to make money? Because if you're just trying to make money, then there's all kinds of strategies we can look at. If you're trying to be around, then there's different things. But like, yeah, I laugh at the strategies and the tactics, because those are things that you can do once or twice. But after that, then you have to come up with something else. So when I look at the gurus, they're like, here's how you make six figures. I'm like, no, that's how you made six figures. If I try to do the same thing, I might make three, because I'm not you and I'm trying to do the same thing that you did the way that you did it. Everybody's different. Everybody has different gifts. Everybody delivers things in a different way. The energy is different. Everything's off. If you don't build something around who you are as your authentic person, then you can only be successful at it when you do that thing. But if you do it based on who you are, you're always who you are. So if I'm helping you build something based on who you are, and I'm saying, we like I, one of the things I do is it's not just the business assessment, it's a personality assessment. It's looking at who you have around you. Like, personality wise, there's assessments that you can take, personality assessments. One of the things I do, if I know I'm going to be working with someone for a certain amount of time, I want you to take that, because I don't want you to think that I'm coming up with these things and that's just my, like, how I view you. You should know how you're perceived, because if you understand how you're perceived, then you can work around or work with it. So like that just goes back to, if it's something where, you're looking at a dude and his clothes weren't lining up and all the rest of that, that's going to be a telltale sign for some people. So I might have to go back to the person and say, listen, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to work on your branding. And we're going to put you in some clothes so that when somebody looks at it, they don't look at that and go, aha. Like, part of my job is to make sure that there's no aha. Or at least, if you're going to do it, be authentic enough so that somebody can see that, oh, I see you don't have the clothes, but like, you got the results. So I don't care about the clothes as much. That would be the better way to be able to do that, because that's something that you can do over a longer period of time. So It's really just a matter of the story that you want to tell, how you're presenting yourself, and the research that you've done with your audience. I'm making it sound a lot simpler than it is, but I've been doing it for a long time. So to me, it is that simple, but I realize how complicated it can be for other people. I think the toughest thing that I've realized is it's a difference between knowing something and teaching something. Like I'm teaching myself to be able to teach people how to do it, and knowing that my starting point is different than theirs. So I have to go to where their starting point is and their understanding, and then be able to walk them back to where I'm at. And that's the beauty of being able to walk alongside someone, because you get to see their progress. And if you take on things that you care about, then it's a win every day. Like you get to see people grow and all the rest of that. Like I have the first client I had, he was at a job where he couldn't stand it. Like they weren't appreciating him at all. And within 6 months, he was able to match his check. His wife had a son and she was pregnant with their daughter, and he was able to leave that job. And then after he left, things went astray for them and they wanted him to come back, and it gave him negotiating power. He still ended up not going back, but like that's the point. To empower someone, I know over the years I've had people that were high enough up in life and in things like that, and they said one of the most powerful things I can give you is the ability to say no. Like, not all money is good money. There are going to be people that'll wave some money up under your nose, and you know, by not allowing yourself to be in a spot where you have to take it is already a certain level of freedom. And then getting to the point where you make enough money where you can be more particular about the jobs that you want, where like these are the ones that I like, so I only want to work with those. That's another level of freedom. And then you get to the point where, like, when you get systems and things in place, I imagine you know this better than, like, just as well as I do. There's nothing like getting a notification that you made money when you're not even in front of your computer or doing work. Oh my God, that's so sweet. Like, when people want to say, what's the benefits of entrepreneurship? Imagine being on vacation and seeing something come through where, like, you just spent money, or you're going, ooh, can I afford this? And something comes through and it goes, yes, you can. Like, you just made that money, so you can go ahead and spend what you need to be able to spend, because you're making money while y'all out, while y'all are on vacation and all the rest of that. If you're in it for the long term, then those are the things that you can look forward to as a reward when you do it the right way.
You said a whole bunch. You're talking about saying no. I must be crazy because I always said no, and I'd be broke as I don't know what.
Flag's a red flag.
I got principles and standards, damn it. I'm not gonna do it.
I know that's right. I got mines from the music industry. Like I know that's a slippery slope. I'm looking at all this stuff coming out. I was there when all that was going on. And my thing is, you don't do anything without asking, what's it gonna cost me?
Yeah, like it's funny because when I was at Microsoft and stuff, and you know, some of my coworkers kind of distanced themselves from me because I was like, look, I ain't about to do all that. I don't give a dang what you talking about. I'm just not gonna do it. They're like, well, I got mouths to feed. I'm like, I got a mouth to feed too, but there's just certain things I'm not gonna do. I'll go back to Mexico and live cheap. Look, I got my plan.
It's a serious thing. It's a
So I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just not going to do it. But like I've always been that way, I guess. I'm like, look, I gotta hustle for my hustle, for my backup hustle, that hustle, this hustle. So, and this is part of why I created the podcast, so people can see that, you know, you can pivot and do other things, and you know, you don't necessarily have to depend on Microsoft or whatever else. You know, when you're out in these streets. But yeah, I guess my last comment is going back to the, you know, people don't remember you. And it used to crack me up even more because my name's not that common. My name is Elise. You know, it's an old-timey name, and I've only met like one other person in my whole life with the same name. And people just wouldn't think that it was me. And outside of that, I mean, I'm bald-headed, I'm tall. You can't forget me, right? So, but people just, you know, never thought that it could ever be me, which is funny to me. Because I used to, when I was in Mexico, of course, I worked little fufu jobs, right? In order to bring in income to do my entrepreneurship things. And I wasn't supposed to be working in Mexico. You know, I had the VPN and all that other kind of stuff. And so when they found out, they were like, no, it couldn't be her, right? And the crazy part is, I'm all over the internet. You know, you can clearly see my face. I got a blog and my name's out there, but nobody ever said anything. Like, you could have easily did a 2-second background check and found out that, you know, I was working so-called illegally in another country.
You
But
told your story the right way.
it never came up though. That's the crazy part. So,
Listen,
you
you
know, when
told your
people
story the
say that
right
the
way.
world is small, it ain't never been small for me.
No, you know what? It really just comes down to how you carry it. Like, so much of sales is confidence. Why is somebody going to buy from you if you don't believe in yourself? So, like, if when you approach it the right way, yeah, absolutely. I remember I being tall, and I mean, again, both of us understand this. When clothes weren't available like that, I had to get what I could fit in. Once I got to the point where I could start getting my clothes the way that I wanted them to, oh, I instantly noticed a change in the corporate world. Like, I went from asking people to do things and certain stuff like that and getting a certain type of response. And when I was up in a suit, when I put on what I call a uniform, all of a sudden it was a different level of respect. And I mean, I got to the point where, like, once they gave it to me and they realized I actually deserved it, then I went back and had the conversation to go, you know, it's a doggone shame, because I was saying the same stuff when I was wearing jeans and sneakers. But because you needed to see the suit, because they were like, why do you wear that every day? You're making it so that all the rest of us have to wear it. Because when I came in the regular way, y'all didn't want to respect me. So now y'all have to get up to where I'm at, because I'm going to come in wearing this uniform. And when you wear sneakers and all this stuff, where you just come looking like you rolled up out of bed, I'm immaculate. And it's going to make me stand out of the way. So there's so many different things to leverage. Like, you've got an entrepreneurial mindset. I like, you're about your business. I respect it and I understand it, to go, you'll always have money. That's the thing about entrepreneurs. Like, those that have that mindset, they're always going to be good. When we hit these recessions and things like that, there are some people that are crazy enough to go, this is my chance to make money, because now everybody has a need. And when you know that, there are businesses that thrive, and then there are those that fail. So, just always keeping your head on the swivel, being mindful of the landscape. I always see business opportunities everywhere because I'm paying attention. But, like, when I repeat it back to some people, sometimes they're just like, oh, you always got something to say. And then it's one of those things later where it pops up and it's like, yeah, I mean, this is why I said I'm petty enough to be an I told you so person, because I know what I'm looking at. And then you see it later and they're like, oh yeah, what are the chances? Well, I mean, we talked about it and you didn't want to do it. So, like, it's sometimes what's hard for me specifically is I care about the clients that I work with. That's the beauty of no, because I only want to take on stuff that I believe in. And this is how I know I'll give them my all, because I believe in what you're doing. So when I get in a situation and they want to start going left, that's another reason why I baked in the ability to be able to part ways, because I'm an honest person. If I see you doing something and I'm like, oh, that's not going to end well, and you want to do it anyway, then I'm like, okay, my brother has a saying, this is my stop, I'm going to get off here. Go ahead, go do what you're doing. But I'm getting off here. Like, that's a dark road you're getting ready to go down, and I don't want to go down there with you. So you have to be able to do those things as a business person. That is the part where some people may take it as being cutthroat, but it's the good sense of business, because you can't throw good money behind bad money. If you see somebody going down a road where it's not going to end well, when you try to save a drowning person, sometimes you can drown yourself. Sometimes the best thing to do is to stay up on dry land and toss them a life preserver and, you know, try to help them get back and pull them in, but you can't go where they're at. So stay where you're at, where you know you can do, where you can be of help, and focus on what you know you can do. Like, be your authentic self. Do something that you know you can do on a bad day. When it comes to, like, I'm talking about entrepreneurship, but in general, like, find something that you know you can do on a bad day. If you're going into work, go into it as a cons with a consultant's mindset in this new world and industry we're in, because The way they cut people, like one of the things that I noticed was when they were during the pandemic and the George Floyd and all the rest of that, there were all these businesses that were saying how they hired minorities and they were doing this and they were doing that. When they started doing those layoffs, the first people out were some of those minorities. And they never advertised that they got rid of them. They held the narrative of, oh, we did this great thing. But if you go to look up that person, you see they're right back to being unemployed again. So again, storytelling is everything. You create the perception that you want to be able to have, and then you just hope that you can hold it up. If you're not being authentic, and if you are being authentic, then you don't really have to worry about it like that. People can come challenge you, but like, how can somebody challenge who you really are?
All right, Sean, let's close it out. Where can we find you?
I am on LinkedIn. Facebook, somewhat on Twitter. LinkedIn is probably going to be one of the best places to find me. I am currently building out courses to walk people through transitioning from being in the corporate world over to starting their own business. So I'm going through the different business journey stages. Create a website, Majority Academy. So majority.academy. And I'll just keep putting the courses up there so that people can kind of take that in. And then there's the business majority.media. So everything's majority because it's my inside joke of they call us minorities, but there's more of us than everybody else. So we're really the majority. And if we ever looked at it that way, then we would stop having the same struggles because once everybody decided to be able to help each other out, you know, everybody would eat. So I am doing my part to make sure that everybody eats by doing it this way. And Majority Academy is where the courses are, and then Majority Media is where I offer my actual services.
All right, y'all heard it from Sean. My name is Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. And make sure you sign up for the newsletter at switchintotech.com so I can send out whatever's going on in my life and the new episodes. See y'all next week.